Welcome to the 14th episode of AJSP Editors Podcast. This is Yu Niya, the Editor-in-Chief of the Asian Journal of Social Psychology. For this special topic discussion, I had the honor to invite Dr. Vivian Lun from Lindan University in Hong Kong. Hi, Vivian.
Hello. Thank you for inviting me.
So Vivian has served as AJSP as an associate editor for 2 years, almost 3 years now.
Yeah, just completing two years.
The reason why I asked her to join me today is because she is an expert in cross-cultural research. She has done over a dozen of studies involving multicultural comparisons. And so I asked her to come and share some nuts and bolts of cultural research. I think there are many challenges in cross-cultural research, such as finding good collaborators. But the focus today is going to be on how to ensure the validity of a comparisons. How do we ensure that we're not comparing apples and oranges? So today I would like to ask Vivian some questions about scale translations, as well as questions about how to ensure equivalence of measurement. Mm-hmm. So first, let's say we wanted to measure a construct of interest in a local community, but the only scale available is in English. So the first thing that crosses the mind is, oh, well, we need to translate this. So what are the things we need to be concerned when working on the translations?
Great question. Yeah, this is one thing I have been doing for so many years now, and obviously, this is a very common issue that would be faced by a lot of our fellow colleagues in Asia in particular, because we would be using different languages in our local context, but then the measure would be in English. So this is very important step to do, is that we would work on the translation. But before we get into the translation process, I think we also need to be quite familiar with the theory behind the measure. So I would assume that this is what we all do as fellow researchers. You know, we have extensive literature review about the concepts that we are interested in, and then we know at least approximately why we want to be doing this research. And so then you start looking for the measures that would be assessing the kinds of ideas that you have. You may find some possibilities, and then you attempt it to translate it and test it in the local context, which is a common experience we all share. So now I would assume that you know the theory, you'll find measures that look like, you know, what you want. And then the next step is to translate it. The common approach that we now would adopt is that we have the English version, and then we have one bilingual person translate the English versions into our local language. So for example, in my case, I would often have a measure in English, then I would translate it into Hong Kong Chinese. And then after we have translated the Chinese version, I need to have another bilingual who is knowledgeable in both languages, but ideally not knowing anything about the research ideas, just to look through what I have done, translated from English into Chinese, and look at the Chinese version, see if the person using the usual language processing would then be able to reproduce this English version. So this is the back translation process. So we have this other person looking at my Chinese version, back translated into English. Now then we have the two English versions for comparison. So usually I would then be looking at both English versions and see if there would be huge discrepancy based on my understanding of the English language. Sometimes I would find that, interesting, you know, there may be additional words appear in the back translated English version that seems to mean different thing than the original English version. Then what I would do at that point is that, okay, I either, based on my knowledge, decide whether it's necessary to tweak my Chinese translation so that the back translation would fit better to the original English version, Or I'd simply take it to my collaborators, usually who would be the ones who design the original measures. And then I check with them and say, look, do you think it is acceptable in terms of your construct, in terms of what you have in mind about the ideas? You know, is this okay? You know, sometimes it may actually be okay, even if you personally find that the back-translated version seems to be a little bit different than the original English version. So I think this is a nice approach and usually what I would do with limited resources. Some people might do it, you know, if you have more resource, actually, ideally, you may even go through the committee approach. This is sometimes called. You have a group of bilinguals who would be working on the translation. So sometimes after you have the translated version back, you have the back translation, you are seeing discrepancy. You can actually have the committee discuss together about what might be an appropriate way to do it. So yeah, this is the usual thing we would do here. Now, it involves a lot of resources. I understand that. So you have to, well, firstly, you as the researcher, you have to spend time on the translation. Then you find somebody to help you with the back translation. So there could be the question of whether I can, say, spend some money, get professional translation service. That could be another way to do it, I would say. But then you have to be very careful, especially at that stage of translating from English to the local language, because professional translator may not be aware of the theory, the concepts that are intended to be captured by the items in the context of the other items. So they may give you a literal translation, but may not achieve what you really want. So at that point, the back translated English version becomes very important for you to then check, you know, whether you have really captured the idea necessary for your research in your translated version. So in any case, either you do it by yourself or using professional services, you still have to spend that time to check the two English versions.
I hear you say that the last piece of back translation is actually very, very important, knowing whenever you get some different translations, then it's your call on deciding whether or not it's accurate enough or too different. And I really like your idea of involving the original authors as well, because sometimes we're not native English speakers and we cannot really tell the difference of the slight nuances of the words.
Definitely. Sometimes, yeah, so I gave you this example about recent translation that I have been working on. One of the items, well, it is intended to capture some parenting behaviors. And one of these items about, I would stop my child from climbing trees. And then seeing that item immediately, I have to tell my collaborators who developed this measure. I said to her, look, in Hong Kong, all the trees, well, at least most of the trees would be barred. And actually, you know that in public, it's not right to climb trees. And so most children would not do it, even though it may be fun for them. It's just not very likely that we have children suddenly go to climb trees. And so it's an unusual behavior in Hong Kong. So then after discussing with her, I realized, and then she also noticed that, okay, what I really want to capture with this item is that whether the parent would stop a kid from doing something risky in public, even though it's fun for the kid. And so now she added one bit about, okay, I add about riding bicycle on the street, which is a plausible behavior, something that some children would really do in Hong Kong also. And so that's a bit risky. And so that at least, you know, we have that part that might capture that idea that, okay, whether the parent would stop the kid from doing something risky, even though it's fun for the kid. So, but then, yeah, that discussion with, if possible, discussion with the original author would be very informative, very useful to ensure that your translation really captured what was intended. I think this is the key to the whole translation process. So either you have very thorough understanding of the literature or the original author can discuss with you about what is really intended. You know, that's the key idea.
Right. So your example with climbing the tree, that goes beyond just literal translation. It's not a matter of how you translate the word tree. It's more a matter of what
exactly
the behavior that you want to capture, what the psychological mechanism you want to measure behind that item. And so know what the scale is for.
Exactly. Yeah, because we don't want to be in a situation which we might call is underrepresentation, you know, or something to that effect. You know, we don't want to be incomprehensive without measure about the concept that we really want to capture. Here is a very intricate dance that we are trying to sustain. Mm-hmm. Is that we, as psychologists, we develop a measure so that these things are printed in words. And we hope that it would elicit certain ideas and then people understand us accurately, then to give us the response according to what they really feel about the issue, right? But sometimes if we ask the question in a biased way, in the sense that, well, now my participants don't understand, I still encounter a lot of this situation. But then, you know, this is also a learning process. So what is important here, I think that the gist is go through the procedure from translating the scale back. Translation is important because this is the step that we take to ensure that we really capture without translation what we want to measure in the process. And this is about the comparing apples with oranges kind of metaphor here, that this is something we try to avoid by the back translation process.
Right. So that's a lot of work already involved even before creating the questionnaire. But you're saying that's a very, very important step. A lot of learning occurs on our side as well when we discover new cultural differences in doing as well. And so that's definitely a step we need to take when doing a cross-cultural research. Probably the second step would be to, after data collection, to do some factor analysis or some analysis of the data. I know you have a lot you want to say about fact analysis, but what are some important things we need to be careful about?
Yeah, so now once we translated the measure, we have our samples, we have lineup, friendly collaborators whom you can trust and collected the data, which you have confidence that, well, okay, this is really capturing what we intend to capture. And now you run your analysis, right? And so my experience tells me is that you always have surprise when you see the results of the analysis. So as you mentioned, factor analysis, this is a very usual approach for researchers to look through a set of items and then try to find out whether there may be some kind of underlying constructs that might be captured by certain groups of items. And that we are measuring something that's more latent, that is that abstract level of concept that we want to gauge, that we want to capture with the measure, right? So that's really always an exciting moment. Now, I think there are two different approaches in general that I have seen so far in cross-cultural study related to how we get about analyzing this sort of data, you know, finding the underlying construct. Many people probably would be quite familiar with exploratory factor analysis and confirmatory factor analysis. The basic difference between these two approaches also is quite obvious, right, to many people. So exploratory factor analysis is, you can tell by the name, is to explore. So basically, we probably have some faint idea what might be there in the measure, but then we don't really know exactly which item should be fitting into which underlying construct. So we explore based on the data to find out what might be there in our participants' mind that are underlying abstract ideas, observed items together and give us that abstract concept. So it's more exploratory. With confirmatory factor analysis, it's a slightly different kind of approach. It's that from the researcher side, you already have quite clear idea about what items that you are giving your participants would be capturing what kind of concept. So you already have, well, if I am allowed to use a somewhat more technical term, is that, well, we already have a model in mind. What are these items for, you know, capturing which concept? And so at that point, we would most likely use the confirmatory factor analysis because you have the model, ideally, you know, how it should go with your measurement, capturing those concepts. And so now you try to fit your data to that ideal model in your mind and then see how much fit is there between the data and that model. So these are the two basic approaches. So depending on your stage vis-a-vis the measure yourself, like your how confident you are with it in terms of your theory in connection to the measure itself, sometimes it could be the exploratory factor analysis approach, and sometimes it might already be the confirmatory factor analysis approach. And so, yeah, that I would say, to put it simply, this is the way I would describe how we decide which approach we might use. There are, as I told you before, there could be a lot of technical issues connecting to using EFA or CFA for establishing measurement equivalence, and also what kind of measurement equivalence might be indicated by these analyses. And that would have substantial impact on the subsequent analysis. When we get to the point of hypothesis testing using these measures, then it makes a difference whether, you know, we can achieve different levels of equivalence with our measures. So yeah, it's full of excitement, sometimes disappointment, but then, you know, I think it's a very important step to take to use whatever means we have available to establish the case that, okay, my measure here really is capturing this concept I have. And I have shown that across these different cultural groups, at least more or less, I am measuring that.
Vivian, you mentioned that oftentimes you get surprises when you do the data analysis. And the surprise that I usually get is I analyze my data believing that I'll get three factors, or that these items should fall within this factor. But no, the data tells me that, you know, you get different numbers of factors on different items loading to different factors. And that basically the data tells me that the scale is not completely equivalent across these two cultures.
Yes.
And when I get that, what do I do? Should I just get disappointed? And then what's the next step?
When I was more inexperienced, like when I first started with cross-cultural data analysis, it was an experience, you know, I'm sure many people share, you know, when they first start with cross-cultural research, cross-cultural data analysis. So sometimes you find that, wow, I have an idea about what this measures, what these items should capture as a construct. In my culture, it worked. But then now as I translated that scale and then administer it in a different cultural group, suddenly it becomes different. So what you mentioned about the different factor loadings, items suddenly don't load, etc., it could happen. Now with different factor loadings, or you have different number of factors, these are all signs. I would treat them as indicators telling me that, well, Vivian, you know that what you have thought or what the literature has been telling you might not work this way in your data. And this is how now I don't feel too frustrated, because now I treat that failure, well, let me use this word failure to obtain the ideal factor structure is telling me that, well, okay, something is different in that cultural group. Now, I think the next question is, what do we do with this difference that now we learn that there is a difference, right? So in terms of the measure, I think there can be multiple ways people can tell you, my fellow colleagues can tell you that, okay, multiple ways we can try to deal with the situation. Either you ditch the measure.
The easy one.
And ditch the comparison altogether, but then we don't want it, because in fact, you have spent so much effort, collected the data, and it's showing difference. And it's actually very useful knowledge to you as well as to the research community. I think other people should also know that, okay, this measure can work this way. And this is a good sign, a good indicator to have. Now, a piece of knowledge everybody should know, and then that would help us improve our research practice. Sometimes you may find that there would be measures that were supposed to be applied equally to different samples, but then it's because of your analysis, the results indicating, oh, there are different loadings, there are different number of factors. Then you realize actually something might have gone wrong during data collection. I have been working with my collaborators on analyzing existing data set like the World Value Survey. The World Value Survey is actually, I would say, it's a very generous resource to social scientists, you know, so they actually openly let everyone use the data. So the classic example that I was about to tell you is this thing out with the World Value Survey Wave 6 data. that at one point, my collaborators and I were trying to look at the Big Five personality measure that was included in the Wave 6 State World Value Survey. How that those 10 item measure of the Big Five personality would be connected to life satisfaction score. So this is basically a very simple kind of idea. And now we have 10 items of the Big Five personality. And it was very nice that the world, this 10 item measure, they have both positively worded items as well as negatively worded items to capture each of the five dimensions. We got the data, we move on to analyze the data, start looking at like correlation between these two items in each dimension, because they're supposed to be negatively to related to one another. So at least for us, you know, the least that we can do is to show that these two items are really negatively related to one another. We ran the analysis, we noticed that in a few groups, we don't see that in one of the intellect dimension, you know, one of the five dimensions, the two items don't really negatively relate to one another. And we further look into the details. We find that those quite systematically, those are the Arabic language samples that were in the data, you know, that those two items, which are supposed to be negatively related, they are not negatively related. So then we further go back to the questionnaires, try to look at the Arabic language translation of the Big Five. So we check the translation. And Google Translate was telling me that this item that you think has few artists' interest, the Arabic translation, at least available on the document, it can be translated as has a few artists' interest or has some artists' interest. Mm-hmm. Now, it's completely different meaning than has a few artists' interest, which means little, right? So now we know, okay, this item can be an issue for our Arabic sample. Now, because after a lot of the data selection process with the world value survey data set, even though there would be 50 some samples, but then after some sample selection process, item selection, we actually have already gone down to like about 20 some samples. And then for multi-level analysis, we do need certain number of level to the sample level units. So at that point, we said, look, we can lose more samples. The decision then is that, okay, so instead of discarding all our Arab language sample from the analysis, we say we should retain them. And it's also nice to have these less studied cultural samples, I think, you know, in general, you know, cross-cultural studies in particular. So it's nice to have their Big Five data, right? Just one item, there's only one problematic item. So the decision to us at that point is that, okay, we discard that item from the analysis. We use only one item to represent the intellect dimension, and then we moved on with the analysis. The story of this is that, what I take from this lesson is really that, you know, it's always a dance again, not like the translation dance, but here, after you have collected the data, you see that the data is telling you something. It can be informing you that it could be some method issue, maybe data collection during translation, even though you trust your collaborators and everything. There may still be sometimes there is these slight elements that might not be picked up. But then it's when you analyze the data, the results are telling you. And so, well, firstly, if you see undesirable factor analysis result, don't throw everything away. See what you can pick out from what's remaining. And also it's a lesson, important lesson learned. So we can always footnote that in the paper or put it in supplementary materials or whatever, or maybe make it a separate paper.
Yeah, but I think you're raising a very important point of, and when the data does not come out as you intend, then you have to make a series of decisions on how to proceed from there. And that requires a lot of decisions that does not tell you what is actually right or wrong. It's more about what's important for your research and your hypothesis, and make decisions on what you want to achieve based on your research. I believe that sometimes when the factor analysis does not come out right, one option is to delete some items and keep what you can and continue with cross-cultural research, and that would be one. The other one might be to just stop and then examine that one particular culture and try to figure out what the reason behind not yielding the factor structures.
And yeah, sometimes the analysis of finding like that could lead to follow-up studies, like maybe even just qualitative studies, you know, interviewing the participants, the sample, the cultural sample that seem to think otherwise, right? So I would say that when the data show up something that we don't expect, it's telling us that the cultural sample is essentially telling us that what we think otherwise, ask us what we are really thinking. So I sometimes would use this example about filial piety, for example, is a concept that is so ingrained in Chinese culture. How can we capture that? So, okay, I can tell you as a Chinese person, okay, we have to support our aging parents living. We have to do this and do that. But then there would always be this thing that is more arguable, you know, that is to be completely submissive, listen to your parents' advice, even though you are an adult now. Obviously, I'm not doing that, right? And then it's quite complex because we are trying to capture people's mind with some measures, some indicators. And we do have individual difference in how people respond to those specific items. We do have more systematic cultural difference in terms of how we see the issue. Maybe, for example, in the case of filial piety, being completely submissive, it's applicable to some cultural groups, maybe, you know, so you have to listen to your parents no matter what. It could be one important indicator of filial piety. However, in some other cultural contexts where individual autonomy may be more emphasized or increasingly emphasized, then that item might become less relevant. And in fact, it will show in the data. Then you know, okay, so maybe it's that always listen to your parents' advice may not be quite relevant to filial piety now. Especially, usually we have university student sample and then you ask yourself, okay, maybe the university students don't think in those terms anymore. Mm-hmm. Now, so find an answer, but then, yeah, always that be a follow-up study, qualitative, quantitative. Then it gives you additional new ideas for further research. And I think that's the nice part about cross-cultural psychology.
So the question is not going to be just about translation or about factors, but it's more about, so if the factors do not come out the same way in both cultures, are we still measuring the same thing? Do people understand the same concept or do they have they understand filial piety, but in a different ways? And if they're different, can we say it's still the same construct? And so that leads to a bunch of questions, a lot of profound research questions that we could investigate. Yeah.
Yes, in fact, well, if we look at the history, I mean, now looking at the literature, cross-cultural psychology literature, we now have a lot more reflection on well-established concepts such as individualism, collectivism. You know, now there are more, if we look at the literature, there are now really more discussions about what exactly it's involved in our understanding of individualism and collectivism. And in fact, and this is the project I was telling you about, different cultural logics, for example, that would be one way to try to help us at least understand what there are two types of collectivism. And I think this is nice development also. So what the lesson is telling us, at least from my own experience, is that always be ready for surprise in cross-cultural research. There are certain ideas, principles that we want to follow. And it goes all the way back to that metaphor you use, you know, are we comparing oranges with apples? Are we really doing meaningful comparison based on measures that we trust, that we believe to be capturing the ideas that we have in mind that, you know, we think is so nicely from a theoretical perspective, but perhaps, you know, respondents may not be understanding the ideas in the same way, but then this is what the data will be telling us. And so, yeah, I think we can follow certain principles to try to get that going, get the comparison going. You mentioned a point I think is important about the right and wrong answer. Whether there is a right and wrong answer about what I should have shown in order to be able to make the comparison. My sense is that we are not very absolute at this point. Multi-group confirmatory factor analysis gives us very stringent guidelines because we are interested in well, a lot of the times we would be hoping to make comparison between group means, right? The score, which would require full score equivalence, you know, somewhat more technical term here, sorry. But then, you know, when we want to make comparison of the score itself, it requires high level of equivalence. That is true. However, sometimes we don't necessarily need to compare the scores. Maybe sometimes we just want to do this sort of structure level comparison. We want to look at how things are connected among one another. And so how A is connected to B, whether rumination really connects to depression, and is it consistently so across all cultural contexts? You know, so that can be one example. With this kind of interest, the comparison of the connection, we don't actually need that highest level of equivalence of measure shown. In fact, you know, there are other colleagues who are more savvy with methodological issues. They devise different kinds of techniques that can help us to, how should I say, not to get at that perfect picture, you know, like you have everything equal, like the factor loadings to be completely equal across all the samples, or the intercept to be completely equal. No, no, no. Maybe we can still have some form of comparison, like that rumination, depression, correlation, you know, the correlation between these two variables, you know, that we can still make that kind of comparison if we establish some form of invariance of the measure. The gist is, I think, is that as an ordinary reviewer, editor myself, I mean, when I see a paper, I would be very happy that if the researchers, they are doing cross-cultural comparison, at least they show the effort of establishing some form of equivalence of the measures that they are using in the research. I would say, okay, then we are talking. Now I can at least follow the story. I wouldn't stop myself by saying, are you comparing oranges with apples? So I think this is the basic here. And then we can use different, there are so many techniques available now. Let's move on. And then I'm showing you now, this is what I'm finding. We can always debate, right? We can always debate whether this is a good measure. We can always debate that, okay, if you change the measure in certain way, you may get better results. We can always have those ideas. But then again, you know, this is how we sustain ourselves and, you know, doing better research in the process. And so no absolute right and wrong. I think I would partially agree to that statement about what level of equivalence that we need. But I think the baseline for me is that, well, at least show something, show that, okay, I can really make the comparison here with a measure that we are using.
Thank you. I think it's a very important point to note that we don't live in a perfect world, and our data is far from being perfect. We have measurement errors, and we have a problem. Perhaps
That's what I like. You know, in all the models, you always find this error term or residual term, right?
Right. Instead of being disappointed by the lack of equivalence, we should see it as an opportunity for exploring that and see what we can do about that anomalies in our data, because that could be a great potential for new research ideas as well.
Yeah, and I think it might also facilitate communication between different cultural groups that would really capture the ideas that we want to test. And we also may be able to work together better, because now we have enhanced cross-cultural communication, because now we know what works, what don't work in some groups. And yeah, so this is my takeaway. I hope that it is not too technical here, talking about equivalence.
Not at all. Thank you, Vivian. I think we learned so much from you.
I hope it is helpful. And also, yeah, I can make recommendation about some useful references. And the last thing I would like to say is that I'm still learning myself the new techniques, and also what I can do with even translation. AI could be one very useful tool, for example. So we are constantly changing, developing, and I hope that we can all enjoy, even though it may sometimes seem quite challenging, but then also it's fun to discover new things in the process.
Yeah.
So I hope it helps.
Thank you very much, Vivian.